Hey all, welcome to another episode of Handmade Pennsylvania. My name's Josh Myers and I'll be your host. In this episode, we hear from a soft goods maker who handcrafts quilts out of her Pennsylvania home. Take a listen. Hi, Janice. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thank you for having me, Josh.
Absolutely. So you are the maker behind, I hope I say this right, La Rue de Fleurs.
La Rue de Fleurs. But yeah.
Okay. Silent S. That's awesome. And you started this in 2012?
Correct. Yes. In 2012. I've really been a maker kind of person my entire life. Like, I was always really into art and being creative. But yeah, like I officially started my quilt and soft good business in 2012. Yes.
That's awesome. And when you say you were always kind of a maker, was it always soft goods? Was it always kind of the textiles and sewing, or did you play with everything?
Yeah, kind of everything. I mean, I experimented a lot as a kid. I always liked having different projects going. And I took a lot of art classes and some art classes in college, realized what I was and then also wasn't good at doing. But really when I found quilting was something kind of clicked for me. And it was also a way, like I had made a lot of things for people in the past as gifts and all of that kind of stuff. Because I just think when you're a maker, you're kind of naturally, you know, making things for people. And you just kind of want to share that love and express those kinds of feelings to people through the things that you make and then give to them. But really, whenever I found some fabrics at a yarn sale and I made some gifts for people and just the reaction to it was, oh my gosh, I love this. I would totally have bought this. This is amazing. I've never, you know, seen stuff like that out. You know, it was different than traditional quilts maybe that you had been exposed to before. And it kind of, and when people were like, oh, I would buy this from you. And then I thought, oh, finally I found something. I could turn into a little bit more than just a hobby.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. I was definitely watching one of the videos you posted for the Stars and Stripes when you were making that. And I'm watching, trying to figure out what it's going to look like. And then when you start laying all the pieces out, it was really cool. It blew my mind a little bit, like, oh, okay. Now I see how the shapes are forming and everything kind of came together. That was really neat. You do a great job with those videos. I know that's not easy to do.
Yeah, thank you very much. No, it's a learning process for me as well. Just like you're starting the podcast and stuff, I'm trying to do a little bit more of that, taking people behind the scenes and showing them the whole way through the process. Because I know as a maker too, that's something that I really enjoy. I love watching people's YouTube videos of how they create and listening to podcasts like this and other things and just hearing people's stories. I find it really inspirational. And I kind of want to just start sharing more of my experience with people.
Yeah, likewise. And that's hopefully the intent, that this will, you know, reach people who are in the same boat and maybe a little scared to take that first step or unsure what to do. And people who have done it before can kind of help out and shed some light on some things.
Cool.
So you kind of always knew how to sew. How did you learn how to sew? And using a sewing machine, I started dabbling a little bit, isn't easy as it looks.
Well, yeah, no, nothing's usually as easy as it looks. That's kind of the trick of getting good at something, right? That you make it look easy.
Right.
Because you put in all that time to learn it. Actually, my mother sewed a lot when we were young. And then when she got a job, like a part-time job and stuff, as we got older, she kind of quit. But my sisters and I were always very creative, interested in learning things. And she did try to teach us, but I don't think whenever I was a teenager, either of us had the patience level for that. But I did like start learning then and kind of put it on the back burner. But I had a very basic sewing machine for a long time. And, you know, I would just get it out and experiment. But I really kind of just am self-taught in a lot of it. And just reading and experimenting and watching other people work.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's how I've done it too. Just to figure it out as you go, either by trying or good old YouTube.
Yeah, definitely. I love YouTube.
Me too. I'm doing more of that because I learned the hard way. Just trying to figure it out on my own takes a lot longer than if I would look at somebody who's done it before and
Yeah, right. And look for best practices first, too. But I mean, I also get a lot of satisfaction from just fooling around and experimenting, because there, especially if you have an idea, sometimes you can't necessarily know how it's going to work out. And even watching someone else do it isn't necessarily going to work out the same way for you. So sometimes it's just great to jump in there. And I think with certain materials like fabrics, you can get some things much more cheaply. So you can kind of take that pressure of like, I have to work with the precious stuff first. You don't have to start with the precious stuff. You know, start with something you don't care if you rip it apart 50 times and, you know, just go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I know I definitely have found that sometimes I get caught in the mental part of it, where I'm trying to create something and plan it out and think about it. And I just have to stop thinking and start doing. And that's when I really kind of figure things out and see some progress and really kind of form my ideas.
Definitely. You have to just play and like work through it for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what's the favorite part of creating a quilt? We'll say we'll stick with quilts, since that seems to be the largest thing that you create, the most common thing.
Just like you were speaking to the Stars and Straps one that I just designed, it's really like taking the idea that's in my head and figuring out how to translate it into a physical form, right? So you're taking that thought, the idea you want to express or the pattern you want to make or the whatever it is, and then trying to translate it out into that physical item. You're constantly having to like solve that puzzle and figure out, for me, you know, like how am I going to take that block idea design and then make it into a block that works, that I can sew 100 times over. Or now I'm getting into pattern writing. So then it's, how do I take that thing that I have to figure out how to make and explain it to someone else so they can have success making it? And I really am into right now, you know, just working through that process. And I finally feel like after, you know, maybe really in the last year, I've gotten really good at taking those thoughts and turning them into something that is very close to what I was thinking about without a ton of struggle. So I'm feeling like I'm accomplishing a lot lately.
That's awesome. I know that's not easy to try and write down instructions for something when.
No, it isn't.
It's like driving.
You have to make notes as you go. There's my pro tip for everybody. Keep a notebook.
Is that like everything?
I have so many things in here. People think that I need ideas, but I will never make all of the things that I have ideas about. But anytime I feel like I'm in a slump, I hit up my notebook and I go back and I can look at things that I kind of like clipped out of magazines, made a really like very sloppy sketch on the back of a grocery list or whatever, any of that stuff. I tape it in there. I can always go back and look at it later and refine. And I have something to jump off of when I don't feel like I have a bunch of ideas. So you don't have to always feel like, oh no, I didn't have any inspiration. You know, like you can build up your own resource of information that sits there waiting for when you have time to do it.
Yeah, I think you wrote about that a little bit in one of your blog posts, how you will paste a receipt on one side. I thought it was really interesting and something I might adapt myself, because I'm always looking at different journaling styles and how to kind of capture those ideas and grow them. But you would, correct me if I'm wrong, jump in here and you paste a receipt on one side or whatever you scribbled your note on your scratch paper, and then leave a blank page so you can kind of come back to it and develop it further. I thought that was a pretty cool style. Is that your own creation?
I don't know if it's my own creation, but it's definitely how I work. Like, I know a lot of people keep sketchbooks and notebooks, but for me, like if I look at the blank page, sometimes it's too precious or too overwhelming in a way. So like for me, my daughter is an extremely creative person too. And she will sit down and draw 10 drawings before she eats her breakfast some morning. And she'll just be like, I'm done with this. You know, it's not precious to her. And she'll just be like ready to throw the paper away. And then sometimes she leaves really cool things behind and I'll take those. And then I'm like, ooh, this could possibly be the start of something bigger, you know, or I'll flip it over and I just use the other side or the margin of what she did. and create off of that. And then that way, to me too, is that I don't like the idea and it was junk. I didn't waste a piece of paper. I used a scrap. And then if I like it, I tape it in the book. Yeah. And I leave myself another page or two to refine the idea, or now that I'm starting these patterns, room to like work out the pattern. And I have that original idea and inspiration that I can look back on and try to like continue to capture that feeling that I was feeling when I made it too. Cause I think that's a lot about like the arts, is you're not only are you making, like translating an idea from your mind, but you're also trying to help like capture a feeling or a mood for people too. And I find that it is really helpful. Like some people take photographs of things or whatever your inspiration is, but to like be able to go back at that and like constantly refresh your mind about why you even wanted to make the thing you wanted to make to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really cool. And that's something that I know I write idea. I'm looking around because I have ideas written down on scrap paper everywhere, and it's different shapes, sizes, colors, but I think I would benefit from that sort of style, getting a larger notebook that I just kind of collect everything into, and that way it all has a home, because right now its home is everywhere.
Yeah, well, and then a gust of wind won't take down your whole system, hopefully.
Right. So how do you, other than the journal, is there any other organizational tips that you have as far as once you start a project to kind of keep everything together, or with the pattern making? And I know I have some templates for things, and just organizing the templates seems to be a job on itself sometimes. Anything else that you kind of implement to keep yourself efficient?
Yeah, I'm a really big list maker. And I always have been. I keep like a day book. So, you know, that it has a traditional calendar kind of set up, but I really just work off of like running lists. So I'll keep running lists of things that I need to do. For quilts, if I take a custom commission, I do have like a layout sheet that I use that has a place for me to sketch. It has the deadline, the size, the person's name or any contact information. It has an area that I can write down all the fabrics that I'm using and kind of guess how much I need. And any other notes that I might need to take. And then I try to have good customer service, and like, you know, I might work on a quilt project for 6 or 8 weeks. That's hard for somebody to understand. Like I've been just dropped off the face of the earth, and, you know, and they get nervous, like, oh my gosh, you know, I haven't heard from you in a month. Right. Well, I'm working on it. But I always try to make myself a little note to follow up with people and just, hey, I'm in the middle of your project. It's going great. If you want a picture, I can send process pictures. Or a lot of people don't need that now because I'm a lot more on Instagram and I'll post what I'm working through. So if I'll let people know, like if you're interested in progress shots, go ahead and follow along. I usually put up, you know, kind of like a daily log of what I'm working on at the time so people can follow along that way. But I always just try to like touch base. So I have that on there. So I make sure I can check that box too. And anything like that. And now that I've started writing a blog this past year, I found this Epic Blog editorial book. And that's Regina King or something, I think. I have a bunch of little notes for you, so you can put like an awesome bunch of links of people that I like or that I found really helpful. Well, her first name's Regina. I'm going to butcher her last name, so I won't even. But
we'll link to it.
Yeah, you can link to it. But that's really helped me get going there too, as far as organizing my thoughts about like writing and stuff, which I never really had to do before. But I found it really helpful for that, and like trying to schedule projects along with and then writing about them and doing other different promotions for people and stuff too. That's been really helpful.
I did notice that you seem to be very consistent this year with your blog posts. I was really impressed. This is like going back through the history. It looked like every week almost on the dot. Do you schedule your time that well to writing and posting? And
I am a really regimented person. And I will say that that is something that works really well for me for working from home too, mm-hmm. is that I'm really good at setting up a habit. So if I decide, you know, I post on, you know, weekly, I do this weekly. I make sure I do it every week. You know, even if it's something small, even if it's Wednesday night and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have no idea what I'm going to write about. But I really believe in, you know, being consistent. And I really think consistency is what has helped me maintain and sustain and grow my business. And also, I think customers too, they find a lot of comfort in that. There's a lot of people that are very wishy-washy and fly by night. And as a customer, how do you depend on that? You know, I think some of the reason that people tend to gravitate toward like bigger box companies is because they're there and they know they'll be there for a long time. It's harder to invest your time and attention and your hard-earned money in a specialty item when you don't know if that person's going to follow through. Like, it's scary. I get that. So for even on that customer level, I want people to see I'm consistent. I'm able to be there all the time when they want to get in touch with me. I'm posting consistently. They can see I'm working all the time. I'm putting in that effort. I'm showing up and I'm going to be there, and it's reliable.
Yeah. So that's, to go back to your custom order form you created, was that to for a commissioned quilt? Do you keep track of all your customer communication on that sheet as well? Is that a separate notebook?
No, I have like, that one is more of like a 3-ring binder, you know, like,
okay.
And I can pop things in and out, and then, you know, as they become kind of, older, I'll take it out to leave room for new things. But no, I don't keep track of like every single conversation that we have, because usually in, like I will keep their chain of emails while I'm working on the project, and maybe for like a few months afterwards, just in case they have anything follow-up issue or anything. But I'm also pretty good at remembering people, because I kind of try to develop a good rapport with people and really have good communication. So, you know, a lot of people now, I'm able to recall what project we worked on. It was special to them and it was special to me too. So saying, oh yeah, I remember when we did that. How did your daughter like your quilt? You know, or did all the colors work the way that we had hoped, that we had planned, and all of that kind of stuff? You know, I mean, I'm as vested in it as they are, you know? Yeah. So it's hard to remember some of the stuff.
It's definitely a lot of time you put into those. I mean, that's a lot of work just watching those videos and the short clips that you speed up and put together. It's, how long does it take start to finish for, I don't know, a twin size?
I'll work on it for, you know, about a month, maybe. I mean, I don't work probably, I mean, I'm very consistent in my work, but it's not like a slave driver kind of situation, you know, like I'm not chained down there. So I'll work a few hours here and a few hours there. And I also have other responsibilities and different things. And I need to bounce too. Like, I don't know if how you work, but I'll have more than one project going at a time, because when I feel like I get bored or I hit like a part that I need to think about a little bit, or sometimes I'm just waiting for other materials to arrive, I don't want to, you know, have a bunch of downtime. So I will have something that I can bounce back and forth to.
Yeah, I do that as well. And sometimes it's more that I think I'm going to be more efficient if I'm batching things. Like, I'll cut a bunch of these patterns out and I have a bunch of stuff cut, but I don't finish it all. So now I have piles of cut pieces. Some are glued, some are sewed.
Right.
It does kind of, I mean, whether it's my boredom or just sitting in a position stitching for a while, you want to get up and move around and do something different.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like if I have something waiting that I know I can like go and do, instead of sitting there and staring and being like, oh, you know, I'm not sure what I want to do next, I can go and I can work on the next thing or other thing and then think too. You know what I mean? So it's like an active thinking.
So if somebody wanted to get, I mean, I love quilts. And when I first started looking for PA makers and I saw your account on Instagram, it's so cool because it's not something that's common, at least not something that I've come across with any regular frequency, where handmade quilts that are new, not resold ones that were handed down or anything. How would you help somebody who was interested in starting to make their own quilt? Is there any sewing machine, like equipment that you definitely need, or maybe you don't need something that's super expensive to get started, or any kind of tips to helping.
Yeah, no, you don't need something super expensive to get started. I love one person I do want to mention too that I found really inspirational, just like in work style, is an author, Austin Kleon, and he writes books like Steal Like an Artist and Show Your Work and Keep Going. And I just love how he talks about start where you are. You know, like you don't have to start at like the super uber professional level, and you can't be scared of that. Like you don't have to have the perfect studio space. You don't have to have anything, you know, like you can start with basic stuff. For a really long time, I worked with a $150 sewing machine that I got off of Amazon, you know, and I only really recently, when I broke that one, because it probably wasn't meant to sew like 6 hours a day. So I recently upgraded and got a fancier machine, but I mean, for years, that's the one that I used and it was fine. And I just invested in, you know, good fabrics, because that's what, you know, is going to go out into the world, and like good thread and that kind of stuff. But, so there is maybe some things that you want to spend money on, like the thing that you're sending out there, but you can work and start with some really basic equipment if you aren't sure you want to invest in something. There's even probably less fancy sewing machines too, depending on what you want to do. There's definitely very basic models that just would do a straight stitch. And even for people that would want to get started with quilting, you can work with just a straight and probably a zigzag stitch. And I really love my walking foot. So that's a little extra attachment, an extra foot that you would buy that would go on the sewing machine. And it has additional little feeders that help when you're quilting to pull all of the layers of fabric through. And I really do think that that is something that I would recommend if you want to quilt at home. But you can piece the tops just with a very, very basic straight stitch sewing machine at home. And then there are plenty of people out there who will do a long arm service for you. So that's where they have a huge machine and it's computerized a lot of the time, or it's very large and they can drag it across with their hands instead of running it through a machine, and they could quilt the top up for you. So you wouldn't have to do that.
Okay. So when you're saying quilt the top up, that's like attaching, once you've put all the squares together and made the design, then kind of putting something in the middle and a backing on? Is that kind of...
Right. A quilt versus a blanket. So a quilt is three layers of fabric. So it's usually a designed top that you piece from a bunch of different fabrics to make, you know, whatever the design is in multiple blocks. Then there's a middle layer that's a batting. So that can be either like made of polyester. I use 100% cotton fibers. You can use wool. And there's also, now they're starting to use like recycled bottles and make recycled, you know, like spin the bottles into a polyester fiber. And then you can use that too. But so there's all kinds of things that you can put in the middle, and that adds the warmth layer. And then you would put on a backing, and that would be generally either a very large piece of one single cloth, if you have a very large piece, or sometimes like a few large pieces put together.
Okay. What, talking about the fabric of it, I know, like you said, that you spend some more money because that is what goes out there and that's what you're going to hold against you. Are there certain fabrics that would be good for beginners that maybe are cheaper but aren't going to affect the performance of the sewing machine or the quilt itself that would still hold together as well and give you kind of a realistic scenario that you can learn from that you'd recommend?
There are a lot of really great fabric companies out there. And I just mean, you know, like you might want to, even in going to like some place like Joann Fabrics or Hobby Lobby or something, they have, you know, some good fabrics. You want to like look at the weave of it. And that's something that you would want to think about regardless, just because some weaves of cloth work better and will hold up longer in a quilt situation. So usually like tighter weave cotton, but I really love Art Gallery fabrics. I love the hand to them, and the weave itself feels very tight and very smooth to the touch, and it seems to really wear well, for, in my opinion. But I do use vintage fabric and stuff too, which is probably just as good of quality. But the thing is, like, now it's probably someone bought it at one time with a good intention of using it. And then they, you know, either never used it or there are a lot of older ladies now that just don't have the dexterity or, you know, have arthritis issues and they're no longer using their supplies and they're selling it. So those kinds of things, checking like yard sales. I love yard sales. Thrifting for things is really fun. And, you know, of course, like more standard things, maybe like eBay or Etsy or whatever, to get stuff, or ask your grandma or your mom. Maybe they have stuff they would be happy to give you. You know, that's really like fun stuff to play with, and you can get really far on that too.
So what's something that you look for in the weave? Is that like a measurement that's on a tag of fabric, or is it just the feel and like stretchiness of it? Or how does somebody tell like maybe a good weave?
Well, a weave is like a warp and a weft. So that's the fibers that cross together. So on your, like if you're shopping for bed sheets, maybe, you know, like the higher the count of that is, the more fabric, like the more pieces that are interwoven together. So it's going to have a softer feel, and because it has a higher frequency of fibers that are usually finer spun together. But there's all kinds of fabrics and different textures, and like even a linen could be really good for quilting. And I have used that in some quilts, but it's the different fibers, so then it has a different requirement. So I think for cottons, though, like looking for, you know, if you're just like pulling on it, if you can see through, you probably don't want to use that. You know, if it looks threadbare already, you know, like if it looks like a sheet or something that somebody's slept on for a lot of times, you know, I probably wouldn't use that. The fibers are already going to have started to be breaking down. So like I said, like I really like Art Gallery fabrics, Andover, Moda. There's a lot of really great brands out there, and they're not that expensive. I mean, you can go and get specialty printed things like from Spoonflower, and they have a nice weave, but because you're buying those custom designs and they're printed for you on demand, you'll pay $17 a yard. That's probably not something, unless you really know you want to make this specific thing for a specific person, that might not be what you want to practice on when you can get, you know, $5 and $6 yard fabric that is really nice and, you know, is a little bit less expensive.
Okay. That's good tips. Is there any thing particular about the thread then as well, or something to be mindful of when selecting thread?
There are, yeah, again, that's kind of just like the way that it's spun together. So, and they have different ones. If you go to the, like the sewing store or whatever, the craft store, they'll have them separated out by what they are used for. So they'll already help you decide what type you're looking for. So there's different fiber, there's different ones maybe for garment sewing, and overlocker machines. And there are some that are for quilting on a machine and some that are for hand quilting, and they'll tell you right there. And that's based, yes, on the, like the way that it's woven together and the strand length.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. It's super interesting to me. And I mean, just thinking back to the quilts I've had growing up, I don't know what happened to them, but I kind of want one now. So I'm going to be in touch.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm like your grandma if she was, not your grandma.
That's perfect. So it comes with the same love, just not maybe the age.
Yeah, no, not the age yet, but my kids tease me for sure. But yeah, if I have a custom order, I think about that person. Like I'm currently working on something for somebody and I know them on a somewhat personal level. And it really does. Like I sit and think about them the time that I'm working on it. I made a quilt for a friend from high school for her little girl, and I knew what her name was going to be. And, you know, it's a really personal experience for me too. I'm thinking about these people while I'm working on it, and you know, kind of like as much as you can, like put good vibes into something, I try to do that, you know.
Absolutely. And I think that's the beauty of handmade things, and why I am interested in talking to other makers, because I feel the same way. When you create something, you know who it's going to, even when it's a stranger. Like, I still, there's a certain level of pride you take in your own work, and just knowing that somebody found me on the internet or approached me at a craft fair, and whatever I made reached out to them. It's kind of a cool interaction.
Yeah. And it's not something that you can get from any other experience, right? Like when you go to Target and you pick something up off of the shelf, you know, if anybody can have that, it came from someone, honestly, I mean, unfortunately, that probably wasn't treated very well, wasn't paid very well, you know, was just trying to like survive or whatever. And I think the difference is like whenever you're buying from somebody that's hand making, you know, we are able to give you that personal experience, and we're thinking about you. And right, you're, like you said, you're putting your love and your time and your effort and your creativity into making that thing. And maybe you make one of it, maybe you make 10 or 50, but you are concentrating on that the whole time. And it's more than just like, I think it has to be more than just like a paycheck. You know what I mean? There's a lot more that goes into it than just thinking about making a buck. Because if you want to just make money, there's a lot easier and simpler ways to go about doing that that require somewhat less investment. I know there are a lot of people that have great jobs and they're very invested in what they do. So I don't want to diminish people that don't work from home by hand. But you know, it, as far as creating like a product, it's different when you get it from somebody that makes it by hand than somebody that is a robot or something that's a robot or somebody that is supposed to act robotic.
So as far as the business end goes, I think you mentioned that you don't rely on this income to pay your mortgage, let's say, or pay all your bills, but you do treat it like a business. And, when did that start, in 2012 too, or was that later? How did you transition from just kind of making things on the side as a hobby to that kind of business aspect?
Yeah, definitely. No, for me, like the purpose of my business is not to create, it does not demand that I reach a certain dollar amount. It is more than a hobby for me though. But I did start out, and my business is really focused on lifestyle flexibility for me and for my family. So whenever I started my business, my daughter was 2 years old, and I had my son is a few years older than her. So I was home with them, and it was something that I wanted to do, because even though I loved being home with my kids, it just was not like mentally stimulating enough. And also, like I said, I'm a lifelong creative. I love making things. And I definitely didn't want to stop doing that either, just for my own personal well-being and mental health. So it was creating things when I had time to take on jobs, and just starting small. And then as they've gotten older and I have more time, I just try to get a little bit more more deeply into it and a little bit more professional. And now I'm finding that I have more time to devote to different things that have been in my mind for a long time that I just, you know, didn't have time to do. But it's a lot for our family. It's the flexibility of lifestyle, for sure.
Yeah, that's one of my drivers for wanting to transition from a full-time cubicle job to one where I make my own hours and can work as long or as short as I want, or as long as short as I need. And
yeah, definitely. And I like that. If you have a deadline, you might have to really push, but there's other times, like today, I finished the thing that I needed to have done today before we got on the chat here. So like at 9:30, I mean, now I won't just be done working for the day. But you know, I'm already like ahead. So if I wanted to go and just fool around, I mean, I could theoretically do that. And it's really nice. Oh, too, like, I can be there for my kids. I go to all of their school events. I don't work that much during this. I don't work as hard during the summer because I'm going to the pool. You know, it's things like that that you can do. But then it's, I have to really plan ahead for that kind of stuff too. So I think that's where being organized and pre-planning and kind of knowing what you want to achieve or what you need to achieve or how many jobs you can take on really comes into it, so that you're not over-promising and under-delivering for people either. Because I would not want to have my customers feel like they were second best to going to the pool, for example, you know. So I think that planning does come into it. And that's kind of something too that I'm hoping to work on for myself in the new year, now that I've started this blog, is like maybe thinking ahead a little bit further. So that's something that I'm hoping to try, because like I said, I do it, it's more like a daily log, but of course that doesn't work for all times of my life and being consistent. Like when my kids are home during the summer, I still work. And they're older, so they're able to like entertain themselves, and they'll come into my studio and sometimes do things with me. And they really understand what I do, and I like them being here and seeing what I do. And you know, they're kind of vested in it too. And we run errands together and pick up supplies, and they make suggestions and all kinds of stuff. So they have input, and I really like being able to share that with them. And I think it's a really cool experience. Like every day is take your kid to work day, and they see my ups and my downs. But there's times whenever I think I feel guilty too, probably like anybody that's working, that you know, I have stuff I need to deliver on, or I have things that I'm trying to hold myself to, and then I don't always know how to get it all done. So I'm hoping to get a little bit better at pre-planning some of those other things I've now put on my plate.
Yeah, I've tried to do that too with even Instagram posts. They have different apps to schedule them out, and I'll be good about it and schedule a few for a week, and then it's almost I need to schedule the scheduling. Where I set aside the time to load up those posts and write the content for them. But yeah, stuff like that does help. And staying organized is something that I could do a better job of.
So do you look at, I guess, because I look at mine as being kind of like a daily log of what I'm working on. So do you look at it like that? Or are you okay? Like I sometimes am, I'm not sure, like, is it inauthentic to post something that I'm not currently doing? You know what I mean? Like that, because I want to show people like what it's like and what I'm in the middle of working on. But sometimes it's like if I'm working on the same thing for 6 weeks, like that's boring.
Right. Yeah. To post that day after day, week after week, it'd be like.
Right. How do you make that fresh? I guess that's something I'm struggling with too. Do you have any idea on that?
And I think that's when it is okay to show whether it's a post you posted before and it's a repeat post that did well, because people do like visually stimulating content. So to see, like you said, the same thing over and over again, it isn't always something that the user wants. And it's, you know, with the attention span of people today, it's not something that might be as engaging or as grabbing to get their attention to maybe leave a comment or visit your webpage or kind of pursue the what you're creating more. I don't have a strategy really, other than try to take a bunch of pictures, hope one of them looks good, and then hope I can come up with something to write underneath it.
Yeah. I definitely don't think that like the layperson that's not doing it to promote their art or their business realizes how much time we spend trying to figure that kind of stuff out.
It's very true. And that's something as I think about, you know, making the transition from a full-time job to doing this full-time, like, okay, how do I schedule my time? Obviously, I'm not going to be spending all my time just making things. There's this whole business side of it where whether it be the financial part or the social media and the marketing and the webpage and getting listings on Etsy and Shopify, that almost takes more time.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And then you have to be protective of like your creative time too, for sure.
Absolutely. So how did you start selling the first time? I mean, once it wasn't just in person to friends and family, did you go to Etsy first or did you have your own website?
Yeah, I did go to Etsy first. I think that's a really great, and I still am on there. And even though they've like upped their fees over the years, they do have the market base. And I really like one person that I've really followed for a long time that I'd like to recommend to people too is Abby Glassenberg. She is one of the co-runners of the Craft Industry Alliance. That's a really great organization for people too to look into. You do pay like a yearly membership fee, but they put up so much amazing content for like things that we're talking about today, like, you know, best business practices for people in craft, like how do you social media market yourself, you know, what are good resources to use, like how do you keep track of things that you need to do for your taxes, you know, as well as like goal setting, because when you work for yourself, you're having to like constantly goal set. You don't have a boss coming to you and telling you what to do. So how do you push yourself to like constantly be engaged in what you're doing and working on new things and knowing when you're hitting that mark, right? So like a lot of that, but she, I really liked her perspective on Etsy too. And as far as like paying the fees, they are driving people to check out your shop, right? So they're doing a lot of the marketing for you. So if you look at those fees, like, yeah, they're coming off of stuff I made, but it's your marketing fee, right? Because they're bringing people in to look at your shop. So that is kind of the price that you're paying to them for sending people your way and making you easy to find. So I think when you look at some of those kinds of fee issues like that, for me at least, it takes a little bit of the pain out of that, you know, because it's definitely, I mean, I started my own web page at the beginning or my own web store at the beginning of this year, and driving traffic to it is just as much of a, like you were talking about, is just as much of a job then as like making the actual thing that you're going to put up to sell, or more maybe.
It's very true. And that's, I agree. I started on Etsy and yeah, the customer base is there already. And whether they're looking for a purse and they say, oh, you might also like this. And it's a leather wallet I made. Like they kind of had that nice connection and referral where, as opposed to your own private site where somebody just has to find on Google or some search engine, right. It's easy to get lost. And it is a challenge. I've had my, I think for about the same, about a year now and a few sales, but it's definitely not as quick and easy as Etsy was.
Yes, I 100% agree. And I did check out your web page, your web store too. And it looks really good. You know, like I think that's the thing that attracted me to having my own site is that I would then have more like creative control too, because that's another thing like with Etsy or eBay or one of those. Yeah, they're bringing the traffic in, but you really have to play by their rules and you can put up like 10 photos and, you know, you have this amount of space for a description and, you know, you can't link to, like now I'm making YouTube videos about things and blog posts and all that. You don't have any of that. So that's what drove me to create my web store. But definitely staying on Etsy and then trying to take those people that find me there and convert them into like a more private customer.
Yeah, and that is, Etsy's very protective of their customers and that they don't want you to get their email address or kind of some too much of their information that you could take them out of their platform.
Right.
So do you try and build an email list? I know that's something I've always heard is, oh, you got to have an email list, but I haven't had great success in signups or I don't think I've had any signups to be honest, but.
Yeah, I do. I have been starting to do that. Like, yeah. So this year I've been focusing on that. That's another great tip for people is to try, but it is hard and people are protective of that, which I totally understand. But you know, I think, again, that's like delivering some of the content to people, like, you know, getting people interested more in what you do. So having the blog posts and the videos and things that it's not just like salesy all the time, you know, that you're also giving them other things to be interested in. I think that provides a little bit more of an incentive when they can say, oh, not every time is it like, hey, here's something that you should buy from me. Like, hey, are you interested? This is what I'm working on. Or here's some of my favorite other resources for people that make, you know, home decor things. Or here's some fun ideas that you can try yourself. You know, so offering stuff that is a little bit deeper of content than just sales.
Is there anything you wish you would have paid more attention to? Like going back to 2012, that if you would have invested a little more time or focused more on that, you feel would have benefited your business knowing what you know now?
I don't know, because I kind of try to look at every time that I make a mistake or something as an opportunity to learn. Like you don't know what you don't know, right? So, I mean, and there's no one way to go about having a business like this. You know, I mean, there are plenty of successful people and we can offer advice to other people too. But, you know, like that's part of it is just that it's a really personal experience and you have to set it up in a way that works for you. I don't know. I mean, I think maybe just being realistic with like some of the time expectations too, you know, and yeah, I'm not sure. Cause I just, every time that I make like a perceived mistake, I just try to adapt and move forward from it. You know, I mean, it's just a learning opportunity for me. The only time that I ever really feel like I made a bad mistake is if I feel like my customer was let down in some way. But then, you know, like you learn a really hard lesson from that too, you know?
Absolutely.
And can you fix it for them? You know, I mean, you want to be able to provide that great service because again, it is like a really personal experience. So you have an opportunity to redeem yourself sometimes.
I think it's true. And I think the time management one is maybe not time management, but the time, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but when you're planning, it's something I still struggle with. I think I can get more done than I really can. And things always seem to take longer. Or something comes up or I get distracted, and knowing that and kind of dialing it back and maybe setting my expectations a little lower of what I can actually accomplish would save me some of that mental stress, maybe, of I need to get all this stuff done. I thought I could do it. Now it's midnight already.
Yeah. And I think like just really being okay with communicating that to your customer too. Like if you take on a special order and just being realistic about how long it takes, because I think sometimes as hand makers, like we feel the pressure to like deliver really quick, but you know, like we talked about before, you're not a robot. Like you need a certain amount of time to work and be realistic and turn out that really high quality product. And I think people are more understanding of that than sometimes, you know, we as the maker maybe give them credit for. Oh, I will say that one other thing maybe that I think I wished I had done better or sooner is be like a little bit more myself, like in my, you know, like in my Instagram and doing things like this. And even in my writing, it's like, I want to come across really professional and everything. And I definitely think I am knowledgeable and professional, but I'm also just kind of like a quirky person, you know, and I take what I do really seriously, but I don't take myself that seriously. And I think for a long time, I tried to just be really serious about everything. And so I was holding myself back there. And like, I think that that inhibited a long time, like connections that I was able to make with people or my audience. And I think actually now that I've kind of just tried to be a lot more authentic, even in my self presentation, that that has worked a lot more to my advantage. And people seem to be connecting better with that too. So I would say, don't try to be what you think you ought to be, just be what you ought to be and let people, you know, find that. And some people will like you and some people will be repulsed by you. Okay.
And I think that's what you want, because you want the people repulsed by you not to be your customers, because that's just gonna be problems. The people that get you and just feel the vibe, and those are your customers, and that's kind of your tribe. And that's what the
For sure. Like, don't try to convince the people that don't like you to be convinced. Like, not that you shouldn't take feedback, you know, like authentic feedback, and work from that and maybe try to like think about, you know, if you need to actually address some of that. But, you know, like if somebody's leaving a comment on your thing and saying that's ugly, well, you know, I mean, that's your opinion. And you're welcome to it. Move on and find something that you don't think is ugly. I mean, there's lots of stuff out there. That's cool. You know, like don't give that person, you're too much thought. You know what I mean?
No, it's very true. What do you think was one thing that you did that really grew your business the most? Was it Instagram? Is it the Etsy store? Or I saw you do some in-person events. Is it kind of meeting people and handing out business cards or word of mouth?
It's like it's some of it is building up like fans, you know what I mean? Like people that I have customers now that I've sold, you know, three, four quilts to. I mean, that's a lot, you know, like that's a lot. That's, it's not a small investment for people to make. And like those people are as like so important to me and they mean so much to me. And they, you know, help pass on the word of what you're doing to other people. So, and I, again, that goes back to just like providing that awesome experience for somebody that they can become a super fan and they get as invested in you as you are in them and your business. And they'll help you a lot. So I think just putting customer service and quality experiences like the paramount of your time and investment and energy and everything does help pay off. As far as like other things, yeah, I think Instagram has really helped me a lot. And like I said, like the more authentic that I've gotten on there, the better it's gone. So, and I'm kind of introverted, so it's like not really easy for me to like get in front of the camera and do that kind of stuff, but you know, I think it goes back to like that old writing adage of like write to your friend or whatever. So I just try to think of like talking to a friend, like what is my friend that I haven't talked to like lately want to know about what I'm up to, right? And then I just chat to that. But I definitely am starting to see a lot more people be invested in that on Instagram. But I still, yeah, Etsy drives a lot of traffic for me because I think it's just such an easy place to find people that are making handmade things. They know, people know that's somewhere to go. And then I do like doing live events in some ways, but I don't find them for me that they're super lucrative, like on the day. You know, like I would much prefer to sell from my web store or sell from Etsy and like be at the pool or going to the grocery store or be on vacation or whatever. Or working on another project is what I'm usually doing. And you know, hear the cha-ching and be like, oh yeah. Then sitting for, you know, 10 hours. Usually I did one show this past summer. It was like 115 degrees. It was the hottest day of the year. Really, it was a lot of work to go to those shows. And I don't think people necessarily appreciate like how much time it takes to get ready for that, you know, and tag all your things and make sure your inventory is on point and think about designing a booth and setting everything up, figuring out how you're gonna get it there, having a helper. I mean, there's so much that goes into that one afternoon or whatever. It's a lot of work to do those. But I do like doing it in a way too, because you get to meet your customers face to face, which I rarely get to do. And so I really enjoy that. And then listening to people, you can kind of like observe what they're saying while they're chatting behind your back. And it can be great and it can be horrible, but you're definitely getting feedback. So keeping that in mind, but I really like for meeting other makers. Like I sat next to somebody. I'll pass you on his information. You might want to talk to him. But his name is Todd Tabb, and he is a potter out of Lewistown. And you know, just like making a friendship with that person, he's given me lots of great advice, and then networking and kind of knowing that you have other people that can say, oh, well, this has worked for me, or I like this show, or I do well here, or join up with this organization, kind of like what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's another way to kind of connect with people in a similar industry and learn from them too, because there's plenty of time to chit chat.
Yeah, no, I'm a little bit introverted as well, and I've done a few in-person events. And even, you know, like you said, there is all the physical work of making everything, getting it set up, getting it there. And then once everything's set up, there's a little bit of a lull. But then when the show starts and people start coming in, there's this other energy that's required to kind of engage people and be on, so to speak, or to be able to represent all the stuff that you made, you know, for good or bad, however it's received. And I found, at the end of one of those days, I'm whooped.
Oh, yeah. Like, your game face is some serious business. I mean, for me, like, I have to hype myself to do it. Or, like, if I enter, like, a gallery event, and then you have to go to, like, the opening night or whatever and be there. You know, I don't think that we're alone. I think that a lot of people that are creatives are pretty introverted, and that's why, like, expressing yourself through another medium is like the chosen venue for that kind of stuff. But I do find that I really have to psych myself up for it. Not that I'm not excited to see people or talk about what I do, but it's definitely out of my normal comfort zone.
No, I think, like you said, it's probably true for a lot of people where it's you're stepping outside of your bubble to display your art, which is putting yourself out there in that authentic way and kind of being vulnerable and seeing if people are willing to give you their hard-earned money for it. It's an experience that I like it and it scares me and I want to keep doing it. But do you have any tips, or how do you select what shows you go to if it's not something that is your main source of sales? You know, you just want to pick a couple a year. Do you have any criteria you look for to kind of weed out shows that might not be worth your time or anything like that?
I would not say I'm the expert on doing this.
Okay.
I would not say so. But I definitely over the years have learned that if it's not like a sale that's focused on 100% like handmade or original work, I don't feel like I do that well, because if there's somebody there that's doing like third party sales, like say they're selling like the 31 bags, you know, again, it's just a whole different kind of thing that they're selling. But then when you put somebody that's able to sell like a little tote bag or something for $5 or $10 next to the stuff that I'm making by hand, and it's taking me, you know, hours and hours. You know, it's different quality materials and all of that kind of stuff. People walk from one booth to the next and they just don't understand that. And it's more discouraging, I think, than, again, and it's just not your people. Like, some of those people might be your people, but a lot of them probably aren't your people. So you're kind of setting yourself up for a little bit of that. I think just if you can find that like events that it's only other people that are creating by hand in small batches and all of that kind of stuff, then the people that are going to that sale too are coming with that expectation. And so instantly you're all like raised up a little bit more.
That's a good point. It's something I'll keep in mind, because one of the shows I went to definitely was, excuse me, handmade and vintage things. And it was almost like a flea market. So people were looking for the cheap stuff, for weird, kind of quirky, cheap things. And when you're trying to create something of value and charge a reasonable price, it doesn't always jive with the same audience.
Right, exactly. And then, you're both kind of like not where you need to be.
Yeah. You get a lot of, your stuff is very nice, and they walk away. But it's an experience in itself. So that's a good tip. I know we're getting close to our time here. Is there any goals you have for your business going into 2020 that you'd like to see?
I'm really getting into writing more patterns. So that's something that I am hoping to offer for people, that you know, have seen me creating things for years, and they say, oh, well, you know, I would like to do that myself, or I would like to learn, or, you know, just they're interested in what I make on that kind of level. So, you know, now when people say, oh, I can make that, I'll be like, yeah, you can, and here's the pattern.
So you'll be offering those for sale?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing that. I've already written a few, and I've had some tested by a friend that owns a quilt shop. So she is like pattern testing for me. So that's awesome. And I will be having a PDF and some limited print patterns for sale. So I'm hoping to move into that so that I don't have to create the same thing 10 times in a row. I make it a couple of times. And then if you want to make it, you can make it too. And because that's what I talked about before, like I really like the problem solving aspect. So once I make something a few times, I'm good. I solved the problem, you know, so I'm ready to move on. So I think that that's a fun way to kind of like build a little bit more off of what I already put the time and effort into, and then offering that experience to other people, because I love helping other people experience like their creativity too. And I love spreading the enthusiasm for that. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. And then, yeah, just like getting more into doing the YouTube videos and stuff. Because so people can watch me be creative, and hopefully I can be inspirational to them. Like so many people have inspired me to continue to push myself and be creative.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I thank you very much for talking to me. Is there anything else you wanted to add about your business or about quilting or soft goods or anything in general? I'll link to your website and any of your social media accounts in the show notes, and any other links you want to send along with some of the blog references and other books and artists that have kind of inspired you and helped you along the way.
Yeah, I have other people that I didn't have time to mention too. So I'll just send you all of that, because I definitely think that, you know, it's great to with people that have like a start where you are kind of mentality. I think people, you know, hold themselves back for a variety of reasons, or you like use research can be your friend and your enemy, depending on who you are and what you're like worried about. But I really just say, hey, just go forth and try it and have fun, you know, and that's kind of what I think has made me be able to take my business as far as I can. It's just like, I constantly am like thinking, you know, what way can I make this thing? You know, what's the new problem to solve? Like, how can I keep moving forward and, you know, and experiencing all of the joy that comes from creating things. It's just, you know, there's such a depth of exploration to be had there. And I just want to keep moving forward with that. And yeah, I don't know. As far as my business, yeah, check me out. Like La Rue de Fleur, I'd love to have new people that are excited and, you know, interested in what I do or being inspired to be creative. And like I said, I'm hoping to provide some more resources for people for that in the future as well.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again. I hope you have a great rest of the day. And I look forward to seeing more of what you create.
All right. Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, that was cool. Hey, guys, follow the podcast. Give it a like. It really helps these makers get found. It helps other people find the podcast so they can learn about different crafts and other local Pennsylvania makers. Until next time, I'm Josh with Handmade Pennsylvania.